Blog Talk Radio. welcome to Into the Darkness. I am Pam Ray. With me tonight, my co-hosts, Intimidus Rex and Victoria Frost. Rex, Victoria, and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the website or the group to call in, to share, to listen, and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is our dark poetry night. It is also an after midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut, porn, or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more adult content and language. If neither of these are your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have up to 2 shows per week on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something for everyone's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to go to Amazon.com and check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. Another thing to know about this show is it is a part 2 of our seriality show, which is a dark show focusing on serial killers. We had for a contest chosen 12 different serial killers, each one for a different astrological sign. And these shows tend to be a little darker due to the prompts given than even some of the other dark shows. And with that being said, I just like people to know what they will be listening to. And, of course, as always, we welcome you. And hello, Victoria, and hello, Rex. How's it going?
Hey, hey. It's good. Glad to be here. How are you, Rex? Pam?
All right, hey. We ready for a macabre feast in Twilight?
Oh, absolutely.
Always.
Yep.
No, you might regret saying that.
I somehow doubt that, and I am just, I am so excited. I have to say to both of you, I'm so excited for this part 2 show, but not only the part 2 show, I'm so excited for the whole idea of us doing more of these in the future, because I will tell you, my mind is bursting with ideas.
Oh, absolutely. There's just something about the psychology and the way, or even the relationships that we get to observe when it comes to this subject and this topic. And I think, too, it does also speak sometimes to social failings. There's a serial killer. It was actually kids that murdered another child because they were trying to get into a gang. They were literally like preteens, young teens. And so as horrific as this topic is, it also really does highlight a lot of interesting questions about social dynamics, how some of these things happen, why they happen. It's a dark topic, but sometimes we have to dive into our own society's darkness to see where we can do better and be better. So I love it. I am excited.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The other thing I was thinking is, as I was listening to the intro song, is I need to do another show featuring songs by Tool, because, man, they're just one of my all-time favorites. I tell you, when it comes to intelligent and deep lyrics, just absolutely one of the best groups ever. But I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to bring on 2 people. I'd like to welcome Jeremy and Kel. Hello, Jeremy. Hello, Kel. Welcome. Glad you could both join us. How's it going?
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hey, Kel.
Hey, guys. I heard the She-Devil went down to Georgia, and I didn't want to miss the show.
Hey, I don't blame you. Rex is pretty stunning with that.
Right? There you go. All right. So, Rex, Victoria, are we ready to get the ball rolling?
Sure.
I came for it.
All right. go ahead and I'll grab the first poem and first poem up is Romancing the Chupacabra by Thomas Blacken. And Rex, will you give that a read for us, please?
Romancing the Chupacabra. Boy, that has an eerie feeling to it, like what was the romance, what's his face from Roseanne? Offering up a, let's go get some videos. We can get Romancing the Bone. Romancing the Chupacabra, the Kiss of Venus. Something about a nymph with a gap in the tooth, dark and scorpion-bellied, tail aloft and lying in wait for the odd lead petals, wide arms, belly, engorged leeches, the heat bed down with the encircling slow songs drawing around the cube, smoking the soul. I have become the word rigor in her mouth, the coy hostess waiting the new meat, timber and slag water, twilight on its knees rubbing the bone. The fire starts where from a distance one smells her cooking, hormones and basil, fresh herbs and fresh spices. I morph from flesh planted in old pastures to bone and then to flesh again, death in earth. She takes my spirit till I stiffen, losing my soul. Listen, the birds are singing eulogies. Tomorrow creeps upon the farm, the twilight in stasis. Dawn is on its knees, and another old ghost dies. And fun.
Read there, Rex. And I have to say that part of the fun of this one will be guessing which prompt he wrote to, because I'm not 100% sure, but that's okay because it's still an amazing light. I mean, the thing is I'm always very fascinated when it comes to that combination of the broken psyche and sexuality. And how so often they seem to come together in such cases like this. So just absolutely very intriguing, right? And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I love your comment already, Pam. I mean, I think that's exactly hitting on the nail on the head. I like the fact that there is so much implied sexuality in this. And it's all pitched in a very subtle, sly way. I mean, you can read it as a very sensual poem, really, with all of the innuendos that are sprinkled throughout. And then the mythology of Chupacabra always hits home for me. I always like the Latin feel and the Latin mythology of that monster, and then how he ends it with old goat dying, which has the double meaning as well, referencing the Chupacabra and then also saying, the man of this relationship is dying because he's fell victim to his temptress or his mistress. In terms of specific parts that really struck a chord, I love in the fourth the use of the word rigor, and I also love following that up with timber and slag water. I think those are two very cool sounding parts of the poem. But enjoyed the whole ride. Very cool ride.
Absolutely, I have to agree. And the old goat dies was like a spot on ending to wrap the poem up. And Victoria, your thoughts?
So I'm first going to warn, I'm getting a little bit of feedback, so I don't know if someone's not on mute or if I've just got a bad connection. But
no, I know
gentle reminder.
Too. I'm not. Yeah.
Okay.
Not
okay.
Sure.
So gentle reminder. If you're not
Thank
speaking
you.
On mute is always a great idea. So you had mentioned in your comment, Pam, about how it would be interesting to guess what this was written on. And in truth, I suspect, at least to me, it reads a lot like Richard Ramirez, The Night Stalker, in part because they mentioned, I morphed from flesh planted in O pastures. And he was originally actually called the Valley Intruder before he was called the Night Stalker. So there's kind of that valley pastures, Of course, the chupacabra comes from, I believe, Puerto Rico originally. And so then, of course, you also have that Latin heritage, which you can't call Puerto Ricans Latin. They're not Latino. They're Hispanic. I'm not going to get into it. I've been corrected many times. But you have that Spanish heritage, so to speak, both with Richard Ramirez and the chupacabra. What's interesting about this is that the chupacabra's mythology has always been that, you know, someone would find an animal and they thought it'd be a coyote with mange or a dog with mange or a goat of some kind. And yet they would see these puncture marks on, you know, their cattle or the animal, and they said it was drained of blood. Again, take the mythology at face value. And when you look at how the Night Stalker happened, they were always perplexed how he got into the places, how these things happened. And then, of course, sometimes there was that mental play afterwards, which gives you the idea of those, you know, glances from the corner of your eye at possibly this chupacabra. And then, of course, there was always that sexual component. You know, he traumatized his victims, assaulted them. It may very well in line with this poem. And I think that it's stunning too, because if you also look at Richard Ramirez, who was believed to be a Satan worshiper, often there is that depiction of the head of a goat. And so to have that decaying creature be the end all be all of this poem, again, really fits into that. He's dead, he's gone, he is decaying in his grave. Even a pact with Satan couldn't save him. I really do appreciate the way in which those ties a mythical creature, a terrifying creature, in with a murderer. Because if you think about the nature of a serial killer, there's not always a rhyme or reason to why they do what they do or how they do what they do when we do not know who it is. There's that picking at their victims to figure out how they have selected them, what is in common with them so that we can prevent it from happening again. And yet, like these mythological creatures, we don't always understand them. We don't know why they do what they do. We don't know if they're even real or if it just looks like what it is, which is also a question that comes up when there's a serial killer of, is this a copycat or is this the original? And so for that, I really appreciated this kind of play with not only the chupacabra, but possibly Richard Ramirez, because it really does feel like that dynamic, like a mythical creature, until finally we know who it is and they can be put to rest. So a really stunning write that draws you in and is deceivingly mythologically based when it is such a dark topic that is written on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you've got a really good point there. And I believe you're probably right that it is Richard Ramirez. You know, I thought perhaps that it might be from the victim's point of view, and it might have been one of the two women serial killers. However, neither of the two women serial killers were really known for their sexual prowess, although Giggling Nan did marry quite a few times, so I should probably give her the benefit of the doubt. You know, she might have known how to shake her groove thing, but no, I like how you delved into talking about the mythology of the chupacabra and, you know, how it started out in Puerto Rico, and it's actually, I was reading up on that and how it, as there have been eyewitness sightings of possible chupacabras as far north as Maine, and even in the Philippines. It's kind of as a myth spread throughout the world. So I think you've had some wonderful observations there. And I've also liked, Victoria, how you mentioned that there's no rhyme or reason time for every serial killer. You know, so very cool there. And tell your thoughts.
Well, I'm going to say that I think it's Nan thoughts. I really do, because it says something about a nymph with a gap in the tooth, dark and scorpion-bellied, tail aloft and lying in wait. And there's also the mention of the fire starts where from a distant one smells her cooking, hormones and basil, crushed herbs and fresh spices. That kind of alludes to the fact that she put poison in the food, and that's how she killed him. And my favorite was, I have become the word rigor in her mouth, the coy hostess waiting. No, that wasn't it. Where'd it go? That was a good one, though.
It always slip away.
Yeah, I don't know where it went. I was looking at the whole thing, and then it's just gone. Ah. What can I say? But yeah, that's my guess. Oh, here it is. I have become the word rigor in her mouth, the coy hostess waiting. And she was known to be attractive in her ways. She always had a smile, and she had a nice personality, and she was enjoyable to be around. So I'm, you know, hate to say it, girl, but I'm pretty sure it's
Cal, I think that's awesome. No, in all seriousness, you know, it's so funny to me. Kind of a contradiction in terms, but you know, because I listened to Victoria give her guess during her comment, and it's like, it makes sense. And then I listen to yours, and it makes sense. You know, there's so much, you know, that you both have just very intelligently picked out the pieces that speak to you on what you see as the potential prompt. You know, I have to say, I kind of was thinking that this was from a victim's point of view. But I do like the parts that you picked out, Cal, and I think you made some really great observations. And one other thing I have to mention about this piece is I really like the lines, "Listen, the birds are singing eulogies," because when danger is approaching, it's always the birds and the animals you need to pay close attention to. And last but not least, Rex, your thoughts.
Well, I was going to go with Ramirez, but this is definitely about a woman. The nymph of the gap, dark and scorpion-bellied. There's the poison attitude right there. For the odd lead petals, white arms, belly, engorged leeches the heat bed down with. Now, there's the thought of the woman sucking the blood from the, leeching the life in that moment. And I become the word rigor in her mouth. There's that note of, that haunting note of understanding death from his point of view. And the coy hostess waiting for new meat, timber and slag water, something fresh, something to come along that she can take the next life from. The thought of the cooking is that noted thought of where the poison is being delivered to. Since it is scorpion bellied, there is a deliverance of poison. I'm more from flesh planted in old pastures. There's that note of using a womanly flesh to the point where the marriage is in now, and he is being painted off now that there's money be had, to bone and then to flesh again, death and spirits. Duality there, this thought to the little death. She takes my spirit till I've stiffened, losing my soul. And as a point of note to them, both in the fact that he's being poisoned and he's being leached upon. And dawn is on its knees and another old goat dies. That's where the chupacabra thought comes in. Instead of the chupacabra being the goat sucker, it is her, the kiss of Venus, who is sucking the goat. Literally, figuratively, and deathly.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep, but great comment there, Rex. And I like how you put it. You make sure to emphasize literally and figuratively and all that. I really thought it was cool also the way she ended with one word, tremble, or ended with that one word, trembling. So,
supposed to be an apex predator. Not anymore. That goat be dead.
Yep, the last drop of blood had leaked out, along with any other potential fluids. And so great comments, everybody. All right, Kel, I'm going to put your poem up, and I'm glad you were able to call in this week, because even though we read it last week, I think it's still always wonderful to hear the poet's poem in their own voice. So go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Thank you very much, Pam. Jolly Widow, born Nan Hazel Doss, Nanny, had a wicked history with many, heard through the grapevine that she was heaps of fun to be around. Damn, she was a Scorpio like me. That's where the resemblance ends. She was a pretty fun-loving friend, uneducated, except art of poison. Definitely didn't want on her bad side, especially if you're married. Which she was, 5 times. Scary. Fact is, she liked insurance money. Don't come home drunk, honey, or with lipstick on your collarbone, especially if it's not her color tone. Nanny's homemade prune pie, a secret ingredient don't like, a tasty treat that no one survives. Would you like a bite? Neither do I. She loves stories of true romance. Found her husband in the one ads. Always searching for the best man. 5 times somehow. First survived. Story told she also killed her sister, her own mother, 2 of her kids, a nephew, and a grandson. Another own mother-in-law. Who else? Giggles. And she said as she confessed, chuckles, her conscience was clear. And poem.
Great read, Cal. I really enjoyed how you put that giggle into it. Very cool. And Victoria, let's start with your thoughts. Did Victoria have to step away, or is she talking on mute? Find out.
Maybe she dropped already.
I know she wouldn't have dropped already. All right.
Yeah, usually takes about an hour for that.
Sorry, kids. Sorry, hold on. I'll be right back.
Okay, no problem. Then we'll go ahead and start with you, Rex.
Well, Nanny's homemade special prune pie. Talk about deliverance. Yes, you're bending over a bucket while spewing out the rump. Ooh, twice the fun. And you know what else is funny about this? Doss. Back in Victorian London, a doss house was where you paid money to sleep in the city, which is kind of what these guys did, 4 of the 5 husbands anyway. They paid with their lives, and she took their money and ran with it, along with a few other goodies, but what gets me is that she could sit there and smile, giggle, and laugh as she confesses her conscience was clear. Oof, talk about somebody with no social graces or understanding of life except her own. Nasty piece of work.
Thank you.
That was a great comment, Rex. And I like how you brought up the shops in Victorian England and the use of poison you brought up the special pie that she often baked it in. And I know we've talked before on about how women tend to use poison more and that certain poisons need to have like sugar or extra spice to cover them up. So
prune pie is bad enough without the extra ingredients.
Right? So true. So true. And Victoria, are you ready to share your thoughts?
I am. Sorry about that. I left my phone in here and my headset. The only option was to hang up on you guys or run back. Kids are back down. We're good. So
awesome.
Again, we talked last night on the show about Kel's writing, because you really do have this fluid thought that you write with, and it makes it so personal. And while last night made it very sultry, this almost feels like comedy. In a good way, in a very good way, because we have provided this list of serial killers that share birthdays. So, you know, we kind of talked I think your poem last week is actually, or last time this show aired, was where I said, you know, I'm a Pisces, so mine is Richard Ramirez. Mine is the Night Stalker. And you can't help but look at these people and see that they share the zodiac, and you know, there's these ideas of what they're supposed to be like, and, you know, you see yourself in those, and yet here is a murderer who doesn't seem to share those positive traits that we associate with ourselves. And so because of that, I really do love the way that you just say, she was heaps of fun to be around. Damn, she was a Scorpio like me. That's where the resemblance ends. Because we don't really want to be associated with them. And through the rest of it too, you kind of have these little quips in there, you know, the idea of don't come home with lipstick on your collar, especially if it's not her color tone, because that happened. And then she found his alcohol in the garden and poisoned it. I think that was her second husband. You know, the idea that she's making these special pies with an extra little treat, you know, do you want a bite? Nah, neither do I. You know, it almost provides this comedy to a very serious situation, but at the same time, it's not disrespectful to the victim. It's just this idea of an analysis, looking at this person, looking at their life, and just going, man, this is someone I'd want to avoid. And again, those little quips kind of provide a little bit of lightheartedness to it. And at the same time, kind of like Rex said, and even as he finished the poem, she chuckles, she giggles, and her conscience is clear. How can you murder children, your mother, your siblings, your spouses, and God knows who else, and then still claim that your conscience is clear? It does show how truly twisted thinking they are. But again, after all the fun, lightheartedness of this, it really does resonate, that final line, because even if with the fun little quirks, it does make us realize just how twisted the thinking must have been to claim that. So stunning, stunning, right, Kel?
Thank you very much, Victoria.
Great comment, Victoria. I really liked how you brought up that there is this kind of this lightheartedness to the poem, but how the lightheartedness, this kind of joking around, emphasizes how truly dark this woman's personality was. And it comes through, especially as you said, and you and Rick mentioned in that end line, where she quotes her as saying, my conscience is clear. I was watching a video today on dark empaths, which I never even really thought about there being such a thing, but dark empaths are one of the most dangerous personality types, and thankfully pretty rare, but they are people who can pick up easily on people's emotions, and rather than use that for good, will use it to manipulate the person and often to gain what they want. And I don't think that really doesn't have much to do with this poem, but it was just, for some reason, it clicked in my head when you and Rex were talking about that and how I could have easily seen Nanny Doss being one of those types of personalities and probably other serial killers as well. And
oh, absolutely.
And Jeremy, yeah. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks, and when she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. I love the read that Kel put on this. and I love what your guys' comments have been. But for me, it really reminded me of that taunting nature of jumping rope and you know, teasing the foreboding fear that kids had over the historical facts of something that was really something awful. Again, that lighthearted nature that Kel sprinkled throughout here, it was foreboding, and it had that taunting feel. So as the slight bits of rhyme that she has throughout the poem made me feel like it's that jump roping song where kids are just saying, you know what, if you're not careful, the boogeyman's going to get you. If you're not careful, Nancy Doss is going to poison you. So it's just kind of that taunting, scary thing that kids do that I just really felt picked up. And Kel, the way that you read this was just awesome. And it felt, I don't know, that's what really struck a chord with me. So I enjoyed the poem very much. I love the history lesson. And that's the chord that it struck. Well written poem, Kel.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Great comments, everybody. And, yeah, I like, Jeremy, that you said about it having that kind of warning-type feel that, you know, comes with the stories that we tell children in order to scare them away from making wrong decisions or running off those beware stories. And I did like how you, like, this wasn't a particularly long write, and we're like, but yet within it, Kel, you managed to fit a lot of nice little details, like the lipstick on the collarbone, like, and the homemade prune pie, a secret ingredient rats don't like, a tasty treat that no one survived. And I love the question, would you like a bite? Neither do I. I mean, it has such a nice flow to it. Wonderful attention to detail, and I have to agree that by putting the little tidbits of humor in here, you really emphasize the darkness within her personality and behind that giggle. So, and is there anything that you wanted to say about your poem, Kel?
Oh, it was an interesting write, and just so you know, I have been married 3 times. Only one died, and that was a stroke.
Is that because you're married to the third one right now, and they're just
as far as I know,
need another pie?
No, I've never made prune pie. No, afraid not. Other than that, no. It was an interesting write. It really was. I got into it. Awesome prompt.
Oh, cool. I'm glad you had fun with the prompt and found the right interesting to do. So I always enjoy hearing things like that. Very cool. And let's see. Up next, we have Storm Over Hell by Duncan Ross Bell. And Jeremy, will you give that a read for us, please?
You bet. Storm Over Hell by Duncan Ross Bell. Stop laughing. You're so near, and every whisper wants to breathe through other. Stop laughing. You're so clear. The sailing ship has left grounds, a ship that flees this. Storm over hell. Soon wash away the burning footsteps. Storm over hell. There's time to feel away, away. There's a stream as my life. The current runs me from you. There's time to fade away. Consider, Red River, delivered when you cut me. Your laughter is so real. The raging seas come flooding me from the fires. From your laughter I will heal. The winds collapse your voice as I am lost within this. Storm over hell, but washed away those burning footsteps. Storm over hell. There's time to feel away, away. There's a stream as my life. The current runs me from you, laughing. There's still time to fade away. Consider, Red River, deliver when you cut me, laughing. Quick coming peace, wash out the madness. There's time to feel away, away. There's time to fade away. Consider, Red River, delivered when you cut me, the laughter was so real. End poem.
Wonderful lead there, Jeremy. Oh, wow. I really like the repetitive line, storm over hell. It brings such kind of epic visions to mind. And Kel, let's start with your thoughts.
I thought it was really awesome. I liked the nautical notes to it. But it also came and kind of made me, well, who in the heck is that? You know, you almost think it's going to be some, like, a ship captain or whatever, you know. Storm over hell soon wash away. The burning footsteps storm over hell. Your laughter is so real. The raging storm, raging seas come flooding me from the fires. From your laughter I will heal. It's got a really nice rhythm to it. It could almost be like, you know, lyrics to some epic song or whatever, you know. Quick coming peace, wash out the madness. It's just really well done. I liked it. And I read his notes, and it's supposed to be Ramirez. So there
yes.
you go.
Yes. And absolutely. I have to agree. It does have a very lyrical quality to it. I would actually like to listen to this poem set to music. You know, and I particularly like how it says things like, your laughter is so real, the raging seas come flooding me from the fires, and with laughter I will heal. It almost has, in that part there, the voice of a victim trying to heal. So I found that intriguing. An excellent comment, Cal. And Victoria, your thoughts?
So this was a stunning piece. And honestly, I want to read it like a few more times because I feel like there's more depth to this than just what meets on the eye on the initial read. I agree. This is something that should be put to music. It does, the repetitiveness really does kind of drill in that idea, storm over hell, soon wash away the burning footsteps, storm over hell, even the idea of red river, deliver when you cut me. This, truth be told, this does not remind me necessarily of Richard Ramirez's acts, but possibly the haunting of his victim. This idea of a ghost or ghosts that just kind of sit on the conscience. Part of what they believe influenced Richard Ramirez was his cousin who came back from the Vietnamese War and photographs and in great detail would tell Ramirez what he had done to some of the local women. And then at the age of 13, he actually watched his cousin murder his wife. And so I wonder if this is kind of that inkling, that mustard seed that was planted in Ramirez's head that just kept kind of running over and over and over. I'm not correlating the stop laughing, you're so near, to the point where the laughter becomes kind of healing, unless this is an idea of possibly being socially outcast, so feeling like suddenly you are in control and you are the one that gets to do the laughing. But that repetition, the storm over hell, the healing and the washing away, really does feel kind of like a ghost that is haunting the murderer, that is coming back, the red river being the blood pouring from the body, the storm over hell being this force that just kind of wraps you up and deposits you. And I think like a hurricane or a tornado, where you just get, if you're caught in it, you're wrapped up and you're deposited wherever it wishes. And in this case, in this storm of a life with these influences, he was deposited into hell because of the life that it let him down, that he allowed it to capture him in. And so because of that, those kind of like, there's moments where it says, there's time to feel away. There's a stream as my life, the current runs me from you. There's time to fade away. Consider red river, deliver when you cut me. That really does, to me, speak of that haunting, this fulfillment of those early dreams and desires coaxed on by another. So, again, not necessarily Richard Ramirez specific, but possibly outside influences. So really interesting intellectual write.
Absolutely. And I like how you touched upon like that, what he saw when he saw his cousin kill his own wife. And it's interesting how serial killers can come in many different forms. Some who have that specific event, that something they saw or something they were part of in childhood that triggered them to go down that path. And then others that, you know, they're just, you really can't pinpoint a reason. But yeah, that Storm Over Hell really did have that whole feel of a mind that is constantly just raging and ready to snap. I think that was an excellent comment. And Rex, your thoughts?
I like what Victoria just said, but I'm going to take this a little differently. This is from the victim's point of view. Stop laughing, you're so near, and every whisper wants to breathe through other. Boy, that hits me, the thought of how rank his breath was. So there's that the thought to gagging in the moment right there. The storm over hell soon washed away the burning footsteps. The storm over hell, there's that notation of that was hit that a ship that flees this, drawing into oneself to get past those burning moments. And I like the thought with the next one down. There's a time to feel away. There's that notion of drawing into oneself. There's a stream as my life. The current runs me from you. Again, that sort of digging into oneself to get past the brutality that's being done. There is, there's still time to fade away. Consider Red River delivered when you cut me. Now that's the thought offering to him. It's almost like a plea. Consider what you're doing with the Red River that is now flowing out. And then he hits on that thought. Your laughter is so real. The raging seas come flooding me from the fires. From your laughter, I will heal. There's that notation of drawing even further. And the wind's collection voice, and I am lost within this. Kind of a drifting off notion in the moment as one bleeds out. And again, a quick coming peace, wash out the madness. And again, that notation, please deliver me from unto this madness, this beast. Take me off elsewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah, it does have that feel of it, of like the mind of a victim. And I like that both you and Victoria brought up the Red River. I feel like that's a very important part. And I feel like the whole poem is one that has to be read more than once. I don't know, like when I think of the Red River, I think of, you know, it being one of the plagues in Egypt in the Bible. You know, all the water turning to blood. And not that I think there's anything spiritual or biblical about this rite, but I remember always reading that story in Sunday school and thinking all those plagues sounded horrible, but particularly the idea of all water being turned to blood, because everything that depended on water would just be slowly and painfully dying. You know, and I think that kind of represents the fact that, you know, Richard Ramirez didn't kill quickly. He wanted it to be a slow and painful process. And if it's from the point of view of a victim, then healing from it is going to be a slow and painful process. The other thing about Ramirez, and the same thing for Ramirez and Nanny Doss, is the fact that both of them are smiling in their pictures. And there's something very unnerving about looking at someone that you know has committed such atrocities, and they're smiling. But excellent comment there, Rex. And Jeremy, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with everybody. I kind of want to combine it all together because I read it as, yeah, the outside influence. And, yeah, from the victim's standpoint, but I viewed it as Ramirez being the victim of the outside influence. Wasn't he the one that had this – he was a Satanistic thing, and he had the following while he was in court, and he drew the pentagram on his hand and all of that nonsense.
Yes.
That he, yeah.
Yes. And
so
he actually ended up marrying one of his, like, supporters, a 41-year-old woman while he was in jail.
Right.
That was, one of his supporters.
So the way I felt about this is that was the struggle. It was Ramirez dealing with the demons that were taking over and taking him and making him do things that were obviously awful. I mean, and what it reminded me of while reading it was The Shining and Jack Torrance and all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. I mean, that repetition that was in this, and it might have been the Red River and Red Rum, but it just kept making me think of The Shining. And in that movie, obviously, the lead character, Jack Nicholson, was taken over by the hotel, and his conscience was taken over, made him do things that he didn't want to do and turn him into a monster. And so there was a lot of correlations in my head. And when you guys were talking about, again, the influences and the victims, that kind of all came together for me. And there was also, and it might have been my inability to read it smoothly, but there was a choppy nature to some of the words, and it kind of felt like that little devil sitting on the shoulder just giving you little hints of what to do. It was like an inner voice in a way, and the way a lot of the sentences were structured and a lot of the punctuation was put together. So, again, I felt like it was an inner influence that was causing him to do something awful. So, but I enjoyed every inch of it, and I thought it was dark and perfect for the prompt. So, well-written poem.
Absolutely. And I liked how you mentioned the choppy nature from the lines and how it felt like the kind of back and forth of the devil and the angel on the shoulders. So very cool there. Yeah, another thing with Ramirez is one of his surviving victims gave an account that he made her and another woman that was with both swear their love for Satan. So it's interesting how a twisted mind like that can, you know, manipulate people. And sometimes it's simply, through fear, so just excellent comments, everybody. And let's see what we got next. Did I actually post it? Probably not. Which is fine. We don't have to be in a big hurry. All right. And, babies. All right. We understand that. Got to take care of those babies. All right. Up next, we have, I want to save that one. We'll go ahead and I'm trying to decide. I was going to have Victoria read the next one. I want to, I'll go ahead and read it. Okay. Thinking out loud. All right. This is Cocaine High Rituals by Betty Page, and it goes like this. Sex addictive high, cocaine numb, satanic rush, nights raping victims. Sweet thrill of the rape, Hollywood, cinema's fear, nightmares come to life. Crimson spray on flesh, knife to the throat, sex then slash, stalking the helpless. California's dreams, once innocent, perverted, stay indoors at night. Cold, charismatic stare, chills me throughout my body. All my fears remain. Lock up my windows, stay quiet. Hidden at home, terror by unknown, and poem. And she puts in her hand, I remember the fear of Richard Ramirez, which makes sense because I think Betty is from California, if I remember right, and she probably would have, been around at during that time and, known the fear that was going around and not just heard the story, like the news stories, but really felt people's anxiety about what's going to happen next. So just a powerful write, very well done. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, it definitely sounds like Betty was around, and this was very, very visceral for her, this whole saga that happened when Ramirez was terrorizing Southern California, and I know that everyone was scared as heck from him. Everyone was locking up their doors. Was he the one that thought he was invited with doors were unlocked? Was that Ramirez as well? Do you guys know
I'm not
that?
Correct. No.
I don't think so, because his teeth were so rotten that if he'd actually been in the stomach, he'd probably lose a bunch of them.
But there was one serial killer. It must not have been Ramirez, but there was one that said that they would check doors, and if it was unlocked, he thought that he was okay to go in and do his bidding because they were inviting him in. So maybe I'm confused. But anyway, yes, I like on this how it does feel like Betty was around and felt the fear of Ramirez, because I do know that he did terrorize everyone in the area. I've seen several historical documents about him. So, the fact that it was so real, and then how the ending of what happened to Ramirez at the end, where he got caught by running through the streets, and basically he went to the bus stop and saw the picture and people recognized him, and basically it was the community that turned back on him and beat him up and caught him for the police, was very fitting. But yeah, this, I liked her take. I like her real feel of this, and it sounds like somebody that was really part of the whole saga that happened when it happened. So very well done, Betty.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. And she really does capture the fear of the saga of what was happening in that moment. And I don't know which serial killer you're talking about specifically, but it wouldn't surprise me. What's that?
Ted Bundy.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. That is cool to know. Thank you for looking that up, Rex. And I was going to say, it wouldn't surprise me if such serial killer existed. In fact, probably more than one, because oftentimes it seems like the mind of a serial killer or any person that's criminally insane has a logic all their own. Has, you know, it's almost as if while everything else is, their moral compass is off, there's this certain set of inner rules oftentimes that, you know, guides them through their idea of right and wrong. So. And Rex, your thoughts?
She hits a lot on him himself. Sex addictive high, cocaine numb, satanic rush. And then rolls in night raping victims, Hollywood cinema's fear, then nightmares come to life. Then that third one, she drops in the stalking. So you got nightmares, stalking. So you got the night out of the first three stanzas. Then the sort of once innocent pervert, the California dreams. And the noted sort, what's his name? Berkowitz in New York did the same thing in the late 70s. As far as the girls are concerned, fear to go out at night or make sure you went around in packs.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you're right. Berkowitz did do the similar thing, same thing. And so wonderful observations there. And Kel, I know you're falling asleep, and you said you'd sit for one more. So before you head off, what are your thoughts on Betty's Wright?
Well, I can appreciate Betty's writing because it's this girl, and it's not, you know, all metaphorical. It's just pure image, and I can appreciate that. This is very, very well written. It's deep and dark, and it tells the story of Richard to perfection. You know, very well done. I like the title, Cocaine High Rituals, because it was also a known fact that he was a cocaine addict. And this is just really well, really well done.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to read
Oh. All right, Kel. Good night. Sweet dreams.
Thank you.
Bye, Kel.
Good night, Rex. Good night, Jeremy.
All right. And And Rex, back to your comment. I really like how you mentioned how she touched so much upon his personality, his addiction. There really was like a horrific way he had of using sexuality and sex. And I also think that I like earlier you had mentioned about his teeth being all rotting, and I'm sure that had a lot to do with his drug use, but it definitely is a very fascinating personality. And what's particularly fascinating to me about some serial killers is the way that they can commit these atrocities, admit they're guilty, and still gain followers who support them and believe in them almost in a godlike sense.
Well, 15 minutes of fame.
Exactly. We all got to be famous somehow. Some of us kill people and become famous for that, and some of us write poetry and become famous after we're dead, if we're lucky. And Victoria, are you back from taking care of the babies? Let's see, I'm guessing probably not. Okay, and so I'll go ahead and grab the next one. All right, and I know Victoria does not want us to have Rex read one of his poems.
She's back.
Awesome. Well, welcome back, Victoria. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
And
sorry about that.
Oh, baby, little ones always come first. Family comes first. That's what I say.
Fairly certain my 2-year-old is in a growth spurt because she's doing like this intermittent crying thing. So I don't know what we're doing. That's okay. I've drugged her. We'll be fine.
Yeah. I tell you, growing pains. They can be a big hassle,
Oh yeah.
All right. Well, up next we have "My Balloon Went Pop" by JMC, and Victoria, will you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. "My Balloon Went Pop" by JMC. Fat, obese, and ugly. Sweating in a hot Cali mobile home. Me and Zodiac were never a hit with the people, who's in our living conditions. Maybe one day they'll make a movie about me. About this, he must have thought that at least a trillion times, sending mental nonsense to the press and police, catatonic mad babblings of an average Joe caller resurfaced, hardship re-amygdalating the madness fevers in men. There was never really anything in those letters. Just another loser, into crypto and wanting to go down in history. End poem.
Great read there, Victoria. I say, this is an excellent brevity, wonderful use of imagery, and a first, I don't know if it's considered a first-person narrative, but he didn't put which serial killer he wrote to, but I'm guessing it was David Berkowitz. I could be wrong, but one of the things I like about this, I found kind of ironic, is that just last comment, round of commenting, Rex had mentioned 15 minutes of fame, which often those times with serial killers do get. And this one really kind of delves into that, a whole idea of somebody who feels like they're nobody and wants to be somebody, wants to have that spotlight where maybe someday they'll make a movie about me. And I really like how they delved into the almost narcissistic personality of this particular, of this serial killer. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, he's offering up himself as someone not unlike Zodiac. The guy was a big guy, but he wasn't fat and obese, so to speak. They never proved out anything where it is, so the thought of this living circumstances, the mobile home, are strictly his interpretation of what the Zodiac might have been. And the thought of he must have thought at least a trillion times sending mental nonsense into the press and police. Now, that could be his own rendition of madness himself, because what Zodiac sent in to the police wasn't exactly drivel and nonsense. And he was in the codes, and it did confound everybody except a pair of, I think it was college professors who played with the one of them. They decoded it and did offer up some tidbits in there. And the guy was into crypto. He was using a number of ciphers. They just couldn't figure out what the pattern within the ciphering was, because you need something as a base unit, a word, a letter even, to get you started. And they did manage the one, but the rest does. I mean, some of the biggest ones were that offer up his name that couldn't get to. So, and the thought with the movie, they did make it about the Zodiac, but there's that thought, if I roll down that road, will they make a movie about me?
Oh, I like that. I like that. And I think you're right. It does kind of seem like it is about the Zodiac killer, which wasn't one of our prompts, but would still be still a cool prompt. And,
well,
and you're,
I
does kind of have
anything else.
What's that?
I can't paint it to anyone else because it doesn't seem to fit.
That makes sense. That makes sense. And I do like how you mentioned, you observed how it seems to be about a person comparing themselves to almost like a copycat, where, you know, they decide that they want to be that serial killer. But there's always, it's always interesting to me when you read about cases, like copycat cases, how there's always a little something that tips the investigators off that it is, that, you know, it is a copycat. It's just excellent comment. And Victoria, your thoughts?
So I agree with Rex. I do believe that this is about the Zodiac killer and not necessarily the Zodiacs of the killers that we offered out. But I do really appreciate what they said. Fun fact, though, and this has happened several times, but as of June this year, there is a French engineer who believes that he actually cracked the last two ciphers, 2 and Z13. And as you were speaking, Rex, that's what actually reminded me of it. This guy is like, he's a French engineer, really into ciphers. He ended up going back to a previous cipher that they had used and some other stuff. There's like a spelling error in it, but he claims he cracked the name. I'm actually looking at the article right now, trying to find...
Cool.
Yeah,
I've
trying to
that,
find the
but
name.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I'll send you the article over
all
the poetry, because the last two unsolved, they knew that it said my name is, but then it was a blank, and even the name is misspelled, which is common in the previous letters, where it says if he calculated his own cipher wrong, and so that's actually consistent with the previous letters too. But everybody's like, it's all sorts of things. Hold on, I'm trying to find. I'm obsessed with it 24 hours. Oh, after about an hour, Mr. Zero Wee said he came up with K-A-Y-R, which he realized resembled the last name of Lawrence K, K-A-Y-E, a salesman and career criminal living in South Lake Tahoe who had been a suspect in the case. Mr. K also used the pseudonym Kane, K-A-N-E, and died in 2010. So anyways, they suspect at least this gentleman thinks that he's solved it. Again, that R instead of an E is consistent with prior ciphers that had not been, or prior letters that had been cracked. So anyways, I think that this was a phenomenal poem. While it's not necessarily on our prompt, I think that it still fits with the idea of the Zodiac. And actually, when you first suggested the Zodiac idea, I did think too of the Zodiac killer, because that's kind of like Zodiac. What I think is really stunning, though, is that he really does hit on that idea of the 15 minutes of fame. There are killers who did stuff because they just want to go down in history. A lot of killers after they are, or a lot of murderers and serial killers after they are caught, will often admit to more crimes than what they actually did because they want notoriety. And I forget her name, but I was actually listening to a woman. She claimed that she was like, she would go and approach men who were looking for a lady of the night. And she would go and she would listen to them. And usually they would have like this guilt. And so she would just go and end up never being intimate with them. But what the last person she spoke with, and then it turned out that she and her boyfriend had actually murdered.
Oh, did we have a Victoria just dropped moment? Well, she's still there. So, Victoria, if you can hear us, I don't know if your headphones came loose or what happened, but we can't hear you. So we'll just, oh, there she is. I'll bring her on and I'll hang up on the other Victoria. So
I don't know what's up with me tonight. every night my phone's just like, you've spoken too much. Anyways, to finish it up, this woman ended up, they said that she was legitimately, there was just something mentally not right with her because she ended up claiming that she was part of this like murder cult and had her first murder was when she was like 13 and that she'd been raped and molested and all this stuff. These people who for their 15 minutes of fame, for their hope to go down in history, they will lie about all the crimes that they committed. And so I appreciate this piece because we have someone who is looking at these 15 minutes of fame. Everybody wants to be famous for something. Everybody wants to be remembered for something. We don't want to just die and be forgotten as like this no name of history. And yet here's kind of this balloon popping of, you know, what is it going to take for me to do this? And I'm not willing to go there. So I really, really do appreciate that. And also perhaps the jive, the little like jive at the Zodiac killer, because while his Zodiac name is famous, that person essentially died unknown. And even to this day, while we have ideas and we have the letters and there's the idea of cracking the letters, not because they care about who actually did it. They just want the claim to fame of cracking the letter. That individual went down with nothing to his real name. So I do appreciate that balloon pop and just the way in which this was approached. So that's all I got.
That is wonderful. Great observations. I like that you mentioned the balloon pop as the idea of somebody's ego being popped because really they went down in history as unknown. So excellent observations there. And you're right. So many people will admit to more murders than they've done just simply because if they're going to serve for crimes, they might as well serve for crimes and go down in history. So excellent
Absolutely.
Observations. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, guys, I agree. When hearing this for the first time, I thought it was about the Zodiac. And what was really striking to me is, you're right, there was so much unknown about the Zodiac in that he was never caught. So there's a kindred spirit in which the author's voice and the Zodiac are both fat and obese, sitting in a Cali mobile home. All these details that we don't know. So the author's voice is, there's a kindred spirit. There's a bond with the Zodiac in which the voice is comparing themselves with the Zodiac and saying that, yeah, he and I were together doing the same things. We're thinking the same way. And then as soon as that line, fourth from the last, the reamalgamating of the madness, fevers in men, it's almost an example of that. He's glorifying what, in the bulk of the body of the poem, he's glorifying what the Zodiac was all about, saying that, yes, I am the Zodiac too. But then the madness strikes, and the poem's voice turns, and all of a sudden there's disdain for the Zodiac. saying, oh, those letters never meant anything. He was just another loser, just another crypto wanting to go down. He was a nobody. And so it's almost a self-loathing. It's almost the balloon went pop. All of a sudden someone, my hero, my inner devil, someone that I identified with, I no longer idolize. So that's where it all deflated for me, which I thought was a really cool move. It was almost showing it happen as it's describing what they're talking about. So I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Great comments, everybody. And I really like, Jeremy, how you brought up how the idea of idolization disappearing or falling flat. And that can happen even in senses of parts of life where it's not necessarily that you're idolizing someone who's evil, like a serial killer, but even the way we oftentimes idolize actors and singers. And then, you know, as we grow, we mature, and start to realize that, you know, our energies are oftentimes better put elsewhere. And so just wonderful comments. And, yeah, it was funny because when I did suggest the idea for zodiac signs, and I knew there was a zodiac, I obviously knew about the zodiac killer. And I had thought to myself, if I bring up this idea, both Rex and Victoria are going to think I'm talking about the zodiac killer, so I'm going to have to explain myself. which I think would be a great idea for a show is the zodiac killer. But in this particular show, I wanted us to have several options with a variety, but still have a connecting theme. And I really like this brevity. There's so much strong imagery throughout Catonic mad babblings of an average Joe Collar. I thought that was an excellent reference to how, you know, this guy would have been perceived, and into just another loser into crypto and wanting to go down in history. You know, just another reminder that we all want that 15 minutes. So very cool, right? Not on one of the prompts, obviously, but definitely fits very well with tonight's show. I love the way Rex answers Rozzy's question. What's up? What's up with you guys after midnight show with serial killers?
I know. I'm sitting here and I was like, that can be read a couple of ways.
Yeah. It's either going to intrigue people or they're going to go running.
Yeah. Little do they know, here on LNP, we call in to death row and have a conversation. You know, the final last thought.
We interview. Yep. We find out what they want for their last meal, and then we write poetry about it. Well,
oh, fated final words. There we go. There's the next show. Fated final words.
There you go. Well, if one of you gets a chance, Victoria Rex, why don't you go ahead and share the link for the show so that anybody just coming in, you know, can listen if they want to. And I'm going to go ahead and read the next poem, which is
awesome.
Jane's Song by Babbler. And it goes like this. Winding like a snake, she flows west, twisting out from fingers of Rainier, steelhead facing swift strokes, pushing down into slit, littered with lost bones, blowing kisses to her shores, plucked blossoms cradled in the bed, a Duwamish. Ears held to her mouth, roaring songs in the din, singing her name in cleansing freshwater sobs of a mother. How many cherry blossoms have fallen in spring, teetering on a breeze, landing petals crumbling, folding into her body? Dammed waters rise, rage and anger slide over top, hushed in deep deltas, spitting out salt, Persephone's hands weave through air, hair, cheeks held to the breast of Green River. Some names are lost to the lore, but all have a place within her banks, a light with midnight candles and poem. And she wrote, she says, to Aquarius, I don't remember who the Aquarius was, but while I'm looking that up.
Gary Ridgway.
You're the killer.
Oh, okay, that makes sense. They're going with the metaphor of the river then. Very cool, very cool. And Victoria, let's start with your thoughts.
So I, again, you know, Gary Ridgway from Washington. From Utah, but did all the lovely things as I grew up in Washington. I really thought that this was fantastic. Aquarius, if I recall, is a water sign. Correct me if I'm wrong, Rex. And so the idea that we've kind of taken this water sign and we're reminded of its nature, the idea, and even Rainier, because Rainier is, you can see it from CPAC. I see it every day. My favorite thing about living here. But being able to see the rivers that come from here, watching the, even like the Ho'oponopakash that flows down from Rainier, being reminded of this nature and this beauty and even this element that the zodiac, I believe, is based upon, really does then highlight the darkness of Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, because he took this element, he took this beauty and he tarnished it. And I think it's so subtly hidden in there. So where she wrote, pushing down into silt littered with lost bones, blowing kisses to her shore, plucked blossoms cradled in the bed of the Duwamish. It's such a beautiful image that she's depicted. And yet when you really think about it, it's the horror. She's speaking that in this place of beauty, in this river that winds and flows and brings life, because I can assure you I've also lived on the other side of Washington where there is not precipitation and there is not a lot of life over there. There is a lot of fires, though. You don't think of death on this side so much. You see the beauty and you get caught up in the life of it, and yet here are those bones that are pushed down through the river that are ground down as they smash against rocks and boulders in the rapids, and they are ground to silt. They are lost to dust. And from that, blossoms bloom and blow kisses to their shores, kind of like that last little capture of a victim, one way that they can live on, even if they are never found or never identified. And then, of course, there's kind of that play of when she speaks of she and her, are we speaking of Mother Nature or are we speaking of the victim? Are we truly looking at these teetering breezes and these petals crumpling, or are we talking about the victims who were taken just as they were blooming, just as life was beginning for them? And then, of course, dammed waters rising. The idea that if you put something in a deep enough river, a fast enough river, you may never find it. And then capturing the greenness, the life, even with Persephone, who is the wife of Hades. She is also the bringer of spring. So she's fun, this fun little juxtaposition of death and life, weaving her hands into the hairs and cheeks to hold the breast of Green River. It really shows this entanglement of that character. She so desperately wants life, so she brings life out of these deaths. She places her hands into the Green River and let flowers bloom from the atrocities that were done in its name. And even then, some are still lost. This just leaves me with goosebumps because it's so intellectually stunning, and it weaves so many beautiful items of nature and yet the horror all together. So if you didn't know that she was writing about the Green River, I'm not sure that we would necessarily believe that she is writing about it beautifully written and well done.
That is some wonderful observations. And I have to agree that she weaves the darkness in so subtly along with that beautiful imagery. And I like how you mentioned, Victoria, about how like certain areas, like your area or, you know, even like up here in northern Wisconsin, there can be some areas that are just absolutely gorgeous with forests and lakes. And yet if they're somewhere where you know murders happened, where innocent lives were taken, you can see the ugliness behind the beauty. I also like the title Jane's Song because I feel like that's a tribute to Jane Doe's, those victims that maybe were never, their names aren't known the names are known, but the bodies haven't been discovered. I thought that was just a really great choice for a title. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I'm sitting here madly Googling the Green River Killer, trying to find out the significance of Jane. And that's what I came up with too, which Jane Doe is what I was kind of extrapolating, which fits very much with what Victoria's saying. I mean, it's all the females, it's all of, everything's been washed away. And I really appreciated Victoria's take on all of this. I mean, it almost isn't like about the serial killer. It's more about nature. But then how there's this deep-seated darkness to what she's saying, even though the nature description throughout this is a very beautiful take. There's a very sinister underlying subtext that kind of sneaks up on you. And I know that Babbler's from the Pacific Northwest to a degree, and you can see that familiarity she has with all that and how she describes the nature of the area. So very cool poem. And, yeah, it's funny that you just said that, Pam, because I was really hung up on Jane's Song and why that was put as the title. So very cool analysis, guys. I think it's well nailed, and I think Babbler did a great job with this poem.
Absolutely. Well said there. Yeah, and sometimes it's interesting how like one singular thought can really take control of your mind. You got to start Googling the answer because you just want to find out, like, if there was a specific victim of that name. You know? But excellent observations. And Rex, your thoughts?
An ode to Jane, giving her a noted place of rest, even though she's probably scattered the length and breadth of the river itself. Hits on a couple of thoughts. I like the fingers of Rainier. Steelhead. Nice note, the steelhead trout facing swift strokes, pushing down into silt, littered with lost bone. So there's that note of thought to feeding in the moment. That which is a prey to the river does get fed on by the river, and that which lives in the river itself. Then there's the thought of cleansing the freshwater sobs of the mother and the Duwamish. A note to American Indian culture, the cherry blossoms falling in spring. It hits that note of the girls themselves. And again, folding into her body, mother again, nature. And then the thought of Persephone's hands weave through hair, cheeks held to the breast of Green River. There's a nice, careful note of almost love in that those lines. And then you get some names are lost to the roar, but all have a place within her bank, a light with midnight candles. And it hits on the noted vigils for those who have not been able to bury. They come to the Green River with candles as memento mori.
Absolutely. I'm glad you brought up that end line with the visual of candles paying honor and remembering those who have been lost. And it really did make for a nice, almost like a tribute to those Jane Doe's lost beneath the raging waves of the river. So just a beautiful and intriguing dark ride all the way through Babbler, and very well done. All right. Up next is The Menu by Micro. And Jeremy, would you give that a read for us, please?
The Menu by Micro. Edison bulb swinging on a pendulum wire, overcome with boredom, light flickering in strobe fire, freight trains rolling, vibrating dirty walls, hiding in isolation, dissecting thoughts, just waiting on pleasure to exhume itself. Dust falling from the ceiling, watching a spider in high step moving towards the flesh, struggling in a sticky web, eight legs of entitlement, dispenser of death. Newspaper laying upon the bathroom floor, obituary removed with a razor blade slice, drops of bloodstains dried into footprints on white kitchen porcelain, opening up the refrigerator, rotting meat and lemonade. Prized photographs, newspaper clippings in an old shoebox, under loose planks, beneath the bedroom hardwood, heart-stopping ribbons awarded to self. Adrenaline stimulating addicts to the darkness, clues stuck upon the tip of a middle finger, then flipping them all off outside a cornfield maze where the blind mice run, escalating city tensions just to have a little fun. Throwing stones at a hornet's nest, watching the angry swarm twisting in misdirections out of time with a stick drum. Turn on the late night news, contemplating next moves, making a night a little darker, increased appetite for infliction. Life is a menu full of victims. Shut beside you at the bus stop, you never knew, normal incognito, not good enough for you. Some got some cruel intentions when the time is right and in the mood. The same restaurant decided not to select you, rode beside you on a subway train, looking over the selections as you swung from the handlebar beneath the city streets. You could easily be swinging, duct taped and screaming, flashing in strobe, trains shaking the room, last look upon your face. Don't pick you from the vine, lucky night for you this time. You still ripening before the flow. Made another selection, but don't be too disappointed. You're still on the menu. End poem.
I feel like the end of that poem needs an evil laugh.
Come on, Rex, where you at?
There you go. There you go. Great read, Jeremy. Great laugh there, Rex. Wow, I just really like how he delves into the much darker aspects of appetite within this poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Let's see. He took number 12, so that would be old Dickie Ramirez. Boy, did he give in quite the bit of background. I like this the descriptive angle here. Dust falling from the ceiling, watching a spider web in high step, moving towards the flesh, eight legs of entertainment, dispenser of death, newspaper on the floor, obituary removed, drops of bloodstain, prized photographs, news clippings. Nice touch with that. Adrenaline stimulating, addicted to darkness, who stuck on the tip of a middle finger, then flipping them all off. Outside a cornfield maze where blind mice run, escalating city tensions, just to have a little fun. So that kind of hits the flavored note of Ramirez right there. Throwing stones at hornet's nest, another great thought as to turning up the heat. And then the thought of who to pick and what. Saw you on the bus. You're lucky tonight, but hey, you're still on the menu for another night.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I particularly liked that end line, but there was definitely some strong visceral imagery and really great observations there, Rex. And Victoria, your thoughts?
So I know he says he picked prompt 12, but I feel like there's also sprinklings of other serial killers in here. So he kind of mentioned the spider, which if I remember, Nanny was actually called the spider as well.
Yes, the widow,
you know,
the black widow.
Who, yeah, you know, there was, oh, good Lord. I was too busy listening to Rex. Now I've lost all my thoughts. I don't believe Richard Ramirez kept any pictures, but there are like Wayne Gacy who did keep pictures of his of his victims. You know, the idea of cutting these clippings and putting them in an old shoebox as a prize. I feel like there are these other sprinklings so much in detail, the way they necessarily spoke about Richard Ramirez. However, it's effective because it reminds us that even if one serial killer is caught, there are so many more that are out there, that we are not safe just because the Night Stalker is gone, or, you know, the Jolly Nanny is, you know, the Jolly Old Widow is gone, or the Green River Killer is gone, or John Wasey, you know, the Killer Clown is gone. We are not safe necessarily because of that. In fact, they believe that at least every person passes three serial killers in their lifetime. And just because one doesn't pick us doesn't mean that we're not still on the menu for a different one with the right occasion. And I think that's what's most stunning about this. We find security when we know that a serial killer is caught, but it also is a reminder of how many more are out there that have yet to be discovered and yet to have been found. So really effective right there. Kind of terrifying.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I like that you brought up that it had sprinklings of other serial killers. And I didn't have that exact thought myself, but I was thinking that it didn't seem to be fully about Ramirez, you know, in the because as far as I know, Ramirez also was not cannibalistic. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember reading anything about. But I know, like, say, like Jeffrey Dahmer was.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And no, Ramirez wasn't cannibalistic, so you are right on that.
Okay, okay. So, yeah, you and Rex both have had just excellent observations on this poem, and it is particularly dark and creepy, but that reminder of there's always a new one to take the place of one that has been incarcerated. And, Jeremy, your thoughts?
Thanks a freaking lot, Victoria. I guess I'm not sleeping tonight. All the bad guys were all locked up. Now I've got to be worried. And if I count right, there's four of us here, and I'm going to pass three serial killers just on this call tonight. I'm scared poopless right now.
Dun, dun, dun.
I'm going to guess that only one out of the four of us is a serial killer.
Not it. Yeah, everybody else is quiet.
I played the
fifth.
Just great.
No, this was an interesting take. I mean, I think this one was haunting, but instead of from a descriptive sense of picking out the prompt, it's actually kind of it's more threatening. It's more menacing, in its perspective. I like that. I liked that it kind of got into the spirit of the mind of the serial killer. And made the reader feel like they're actually in it. They're in the sights. They are on the menu. They could be next. I'm more of a stretch in my interpretation of this. In terms of a menu, I like that they menued a number of different symbols, a number of different items, and they kept coming back to them. I like the light bulb that kept coming back. I like the newspaper that kept coming back. It kind of felt like there was a list, there was a methodology, there was a instruction manual that the serial killer was following, and he had his toolbox to use to do his bidding. And that's kind of what I kind of took from the stretch of the themes of that. It might be a little bit much, but I did notice that there was a little bit of repetition in that when I was going through it. So very cool poem. I like the different perspective. Very well done.
Absolutely. And I like that you mentioned the methodology in it, which is true. There is a certain repetitiveness that gives that sense of oftentimes what serial killers, people with destroyed minds seem to need is that kind of repetitiveness. So excellent comments, everybody. And up next is Blessed is He Who Cries for Forgiveness by Honey Lynn. And Victoria, will you give that a read for us, please?
Absolutely. Blessed is he who cries for forgiveness. For what is an illusion out of one's wrong delusion to proclaim oneself as an angel of death and the suffering of patients through his own way of mercy killing. For who are the man who walks kicking a tin can, whose gravity of committing such mortal sins can't be swished off a day, whose only moon is in gloom, and whose sun comprises only in the autumn twilight? A 28 life sentences verdict was rendered, the right to live ousted just with thousands of dollars, being paid within the four corners of that dark room, solitary echoes where thunderstorms sounded in grief, stolen futures, ended dreams, whose souls had been tormented. Wasn't he whose hand caught on iron cage, wounded with unhealed scars? Ruthless was that man whose heart was made of steel. Couldn't be pounded by fears and by innocent tears, whose spirit was a devil's advocate, whose soul was uncompassionate, showing no remorse in his course of action for what was mercy when the culprit didn't even reciprocate his self with clemency. When will forgiveness blossom? If the act of repentance wasn't shown, when will humanity condemn? I stand amidst the trial of the century. I watched this man's whole documentary, featured not only in a theory he committed an estimated 87 alleged heinous crimes perfectly. Had been served well, if 7 pounds reason shall teach perpetrators 7 important life lessons, so that this man, able to grab the privilege of repentance, truly the sins of this lost mortal surpassed beyond the deepest grave. Yet, he was only human, and who am I to judge? End poem.
Excellent read there, Victoria. I found this a very intriguing write, as it focused more not only on the serial killer as a human, but also our own psychology of how we perceive people. I just thought that she went into some wonderful details. I like how she shared with us about watching his documentary. Just really showed us how ruthless this man was, and yet at the same time looked inside herself to say, you know, who am I to judge? Now, personally, I think if people kill multiple people and you haven't, it's okay for you to judge. I certainly do. But, you know, that's just my thoughts. And Rex, your thoughts?
Did a good job with this one, offering up that thought, mercy killing. Yeah, I find that to be a load of rubbish. They're having heart problems. Let me smother him. And he gets to enjoy it. Nah, the guy was twisted to begin with. 28 life sentences. You know what? I've got no problem calling a spade a spade. The son of a bitch should be dead. He doesn't deserve to live in prison splendor and ease of life, being fed 3 squares a day and television and other privileges. He took 28 lives at least. Where were their privileges?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You make a really good point there. They have lost their privileges. And sometimes there's just too much almost of a reward system for those who have committed such atrocities. So great observations. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
I like the mix in each stanza of historical recounting or historical storytelling, and then inner commentary, inner thoughts, or even imagination. Imagination being stuff that Honeyland couldn't know what was going on with the serial killer, but she kind of puts her mind in the deeper thoughts. And it was made beautiful. I think the best and the most memorable part of which I'm trying to describe is in the end of the first, where she starts talking about this awful person who went around killing patients that they had as an orderly. But then she makes it beautiful at the end of that stanza. Can't be switched off a day whose only moon is in gloom and whose sun's conspires only in the autumn's twilight. And again, it was just a cool mix. It was a cool it was a cool way of looking at things and then making it her own in her interpretation of what this awful person was going through. So kudos to that. I think it was a very interesting take on the prompt.
Absolutely. Absolutely well said there. And you're the one that just spoke. Victoria, your thoughts.
So what I really like, or what I find interesting about this, and this is what I've been thinking about, is that first there's that religious component, which fits with an angel. And there are various religions that have angels. It's not just expressly Christianity that has angels, but we think of angels as these benevolent creatures that align with a deity that is good, gives forgiveness, benevolence, all that great stuff. But when you look at Donald Harvey, while he claims that he started off these killings to ease patients' pain by smothering them, not sure how that correlates with easing their pain. You know, I'd personally be like overdosed on morphine if that was the case. But while he starts with this idea of I'm doing this for the good of the patients, he even admitted, he admitted later on that he grew to enjoy murdering. An angel of death is someone, typically a nurse or a doctor, that kills a patient because they think they are doing some sort of good. So there's a really interesting twist here. Here is someone who's self-describing themselves as an angel of death, probably to feel better about it, because really at this point, or at least eventually, they started to kill just to kill, which is not an angel of death. They're contradicting
exactly
what an angel of death is. And in this poem, they are being portrayed as an angel, or thinking of them as a benevolent angel, when in reality they act more like a demon. Another contradiction. Not truly seeking forgiveness. On a side note, in the middle of the pandemic, there was a Reddit AMA, and it was actually from an investigator who investigates angels of death. And I got to have a conversation with this investigator via Reddit, and one of the questions I proposed to him was, do you think that angels of death will become more prevalent with the pandemic? And terrifyingly, that there were deaths that were murdered and were covered up because everything was just so chaotic. But I appreciate how this poem, while it is beautiful and speaks of forgiveness, also throws the book in his face, that he was no angel, that he did not seek forgiveness, and nothing he did was out of benevolence. It reads almost as a beautiful satire to the whole situation, because even if he repented or claims that he felt bad about it, in the end, he did it because he enjoyed it. So really quite an interesting
Oh, absolutely. Right? Absolutely wonderful observations there, Victoria and everyone. All right, well, we only got about 10 minutes left, and I want to get my rights in, and I want to get one of Rex's rights in. So I'm going to have us go ahead and move on, and I'm going to read my right, which is inspired by the serial killer Rudolph Pleyel, and Rex is going to go ahead and read comments. All right. This is the calculated blow of a walk down trails, and it goes like this. Is it evil to be calm? Is it the devil's tool to be calculated? I walked from childhood across dark veins of shadows. Death and lust called to me from fields of tall grass, a towering forests of pine. The blood runs from the stone. The blood runs from the river. I seek pleasure from the forbidden woman. I fathered the forbidden child. I am the forbidden madness. Consuming nectar of formaldehyde, hops growing upon my breath, like charity to the poor. I have no control over flailing limbs except to bite the spoon and dry hump the grass of my melancholy. You should lock me up in the madhouse, for I'm nothing but a lunatic, unaware of what I do. Let me live forever in the stories you tell. Wrap me in mummified tissue of morality. I am the bringer of death. I travel through mountains and choke on meat. I am no fool, and neither are you. We both know I meant every blow of every hammer, and the cracking of every bone was a song paying tribute to the birth of my superiority. I died as I lived, drool on my chin and shit in my pants. A spirit of air hung from the iron bar, a butcher and breaker of wills. Keep counting the numbers of the dead if it gives you a sense of peace. As for me, I am simply bored. There's no cats to kill, no nightmares to bring to truth. Everything tastes the same, like pancakes made of ashes. The stage is set, and I will play my part at the end of a rope. And boom.
Right, read, Pam. All right, Vix, you get first call on this one.
I think this is such a stunning write. And I always say that about Pam's writes, but I love the way that you write, Pam, because it doesn't feel forced. You seem to put yourself in the head space of these characters that you're writing about, be it real or fictitious. And so you create these beautiful stories that are grotesque and terrifying and macabre, and yet they are so intriguing because I feel like you've crawled inside this man's mind. I particularly liked, where was it? Good Lord. Of course, when we're on a time limit, I can't find it. I meant every blow of every hammer and the cracking of every bone was a song paying tribute to the birth of my superiority. I always like to delve into the psychology. Unfortunately, I'm not as familiar with Rudolf Palil as I would like, but I do know that he was moved with the Nazi invasion. He was moved into a different town, which could very well make you lose power, make you lose the community that you grow up in. It was very destabilizing. He grew up in a time where when he impregnated a woman, he had to get married to her, which can create some hard feelings towards the opposite sex if the relationship isn't good. I don't know what their relationship was, though. But if I recall, too, and briefly reading over his stuff, he also had two accomplices. And so there's that idea of like community and proving who you are in this world that was very tightly controlled by the Nazi regime. And so for him to say, you know, and they murdered police and women. So it didn't seem like it was a one victim type in particular, but it does show that there's kind of this idea to prove yourself, not good enough to be a soldier, not pure enough to stay where he was, kind of forced to go and live his life and figure it out. And so this was his rise against the force and the society that he was forced to live in. And yet he ends the same way he lived, pretty much just drooling with shit in his pants and barely able to even hang on. So just a really stunning write, Pam.
Thank you.
Well, said Victoria. Thank you. And Jeremy, how about you?
Well, now I know which one of us is the serial killer. Pam.
Hey, I pled the fifth.
Pam, you got into the mind of this in an extraordinary way. I loved it. I loved how you came about it. And I think you set the scene of, or even the definition of the true sociopath right from the start. Is it evil to be calm? Is the devil a tool to be calculated? So, yeah, it's someone that is, that you don't expect, like you, Pam.
Yeah, it's
she is the Kevin of LNP.
But then also what you sweet voices. Exactly. But then what you did in taking all these natural themes and then making them sinister, the best example that I have is when you said you want to dry hump the grass of the melancholy. It was like you're going through nature and you're putting blood over the stone. You're making everything evil with the evil thoughts of what's going on in this killer, and I thought that was done throughout, and I love the way that you interpreted this and took this over with the prompt. So very well done.
Thank you very much.
Well, you hit on quite a bit in him. I seek pleasures from the forbidden woman. Even though he got married, what was it, early in his life, he started out by raping women first before he started killing them. Then he got into killing the women and while he was raping them. So this was someone off their kills for a bit, the sort of consuming nectar, formaldehyde, hops grow upon my breath, like charity to the poor. I have no control over flailing limbs, except to bite the spoon as I hunt the grass, my melancholy. And it kind of paints in a nice way, so to speak. And then the thought hitting on the knowing his madness and he should be locked up and enjoyment. I meant every blow of every hammer, the cracking of every bone was a song paying tribute to the birth of my superiority. Boy, there is that note that seems to hit serial killers. Their superiority, their right in this world to see and do as they see fit. And then the end, hey, you know what? Do what you must. I understand my part. It is now time to die. Simply.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you, Rex. But some of those lines were actually references to the fact that he was epileptic. Like, I have no control of flailing limbs except to bite the spoon was just reference on how they used to put spoons in people's mouths so they wouldn't bite their tongues when they were having seizures. And interestingly enough, he wasn't actually supposed to have a child because epileptics in Germany at that time were on the list of people who were forced to have sterilization done. His sister had gotten sterilized, and he was scheduled to get sterilized, except the clinic that his sterilization was supposed to happen at actually had a fire that day. Just,
you're kidding me. Oh, my goodness.
All right, well, let's go ahead, and even if we run over a little bit, because the thing is if we only technically have a couple minutes left, but I want to get Rex's right in, and I want you, Victoria and Jeremy, to stay on the line, because even if we go off the air, the show will still be recorded, and people will get to listen in and hear Rex's read and our comments. So, Rex, I've put up your poem, Festa Macabra Nella Penumbra.
Festa Macabra Nella Penumbra. Mons chimes whisper, the more I rustlings to sweet catharsis. Subcutaneous treasures sought, our punctured romance bears fruit, as sweet cherry blossoms breathe, fondled deliveries warm, decadent. In perfumed erotica, copper coffers rich, viscous. Tender is that naked mound, to partake of such full lips, delicious, lovely is that meal offered. Wheeling a fully stocked gerudon into place, I survey the setting, all is just right, an open air decant wafts warmly, Shiraz. Hello, love, so glad you could join me. Make yourself comfortable. I'll be right back and we shall enjoy this tasty repast. A little olive oil, shallots, shaved garlic. Exquisite aroma, don't you think? Paper thin, veneris tinged with pink Himalayan salt. Fresh ground star anise, lightly flowers. Shouldn't take but a minute. Squeeze in a little fresh lemon. Touch of Pinot Grigio. All of this shall adorn our peppery baby leaf mix. Light, fresh, and flavorful. And this, dear heart, is a plank of legato umano, salt and peppered, then rolled in black poppy seeds, seared on both sides, sliced and eaten atop these blue bliss crispets. We've got garni of soy, orange caviar, wasabi, and curls of Asiago. Here, I've been prattling on so much that I have neglected to thank you for your generosity in providing such delectable and sumptuous tokens for the enjoyment of my palate. Cheers, ma chérie. E sanguinem nigrum rosas. I shall tidy up and introduce you to the incinerator. Can't have you just lying around. Now can we? And boom.
And now, Jeremy, you know who the actual serial killer is. I have to tell you, that was a wonderful read, Rex, and just an excellent first-person narrative. You truly bring in the charming side of the serial killer, and the wonderful just imagery of that dark appetite. Really just wow. And Victoria, your thoughts?
So this does not obviously remind me of any of the serial killers that are on our show tonight, but it does remind me of Hannibal Lecter, kind of that idea of prepping. Oh, go ahead, Rex. I heard you start talking.
Oh, no, yes, you got it.
Okay. but it reminds me kind of the Silence of the Lambs. You know, there's the murderer, and then yet they prep this beautiful feast, things that look high class and delicious and taste delectable. The finest details went into it. And I did appreciate the, hello, love, so glad you could join me. Make yourself comfortable. I'll be right back, and we shall enjoy this tasty repast, because that could be both Hannibal Lecter speaking to his guests, and in prepping the meal, could be even speaking to the victim. So there's kind of that double word play that, or double connotation that I really kind of appreciate in that. And then, of course, you present us with the meal, which does sound exquisite. You know, these, the wasabi, orange caviar, curls of Asiago, all of it just sounds delectable. It leaves you salivating, and yet you have to understand that the protein on the plate is a person. And so to kind of shoo them away, of course, they're going to go and incinerate them, because that, you know, we just can't have that. And of course, the high class nature of, we're doing this feast and we're going to follow with the social expectations of what a house should look like, all the while serving up a human being, which is just, you know, faux pas. It's just a stunning rite. And again, I mean, Jeremy, you've crossed three serial killers in your lifetime. I feel like I might be protesting too much to say definitely not me, but, you know, none of my work was read tonight. So I guess we'll just leave the jury out on that one.
There you go. Great comment, Victoria. Wonderful observations there. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah. yeah, I'm glad that you picked up on the Hannibal Lecter piece, Victoria, and I'm glad that was the correct answer. It definitely reminded me of the scene, I think it was in the second one, where Ray Liotta is sitting there with his head cut off and Starling is drugged so she can't leave the table, and Hannibal Lecter's kind of dancing around, serving up poor Ray Liotta's brains for dinner in front of all of them. I mean, there's that elegance to it. There is that glee to it. And then reading this and knowing the prompt tonight, Rex is reading this poem through, and I'm just waiting for that shoe to drop, and it was killing me. And I'm glad it finally did at the end. It brought such a smile to my face. But, Rex, the language that you have in this, the multiple languages, and the line that I love the most, I love the Shara in the second chapter there. I loved how that kind of brought it together. But you have so much beautiful wordplay throughout that it was a dance. It was an elegant meal, and I just knew something was coming, and it was at the pit of my stomach. But a wonderful, beautiful rite, despite the dark undertones there that you drop on us at the end. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you very much, Jeremy. We had a bit of fun with it.
Yeah, we can tell. And I see 4 years ago you won gold on this, so congratulations on that. Excellent comment, Jeremy. Yeah, I have to say, Rex, you do darkness so beautifully. And I like that it makes sense to me that you would do a rite that delves into the realm of Hannibal Lecter and write about food so elegantly, given that you had been a chef before and worked with food. It is interesting how most of this really isn't that dark, except for that once you get to the end and realize what's going on, because it describes such an elegant and delicious meal. And then that shoe that is dropped, as Jeremy said, that ending line. So just absolutely a perfect rite to end on, and very well done.
It's the words you choose, like Mons, and Veneris, most people don't think in those terms. And
absolutely,
dropping in Italian as a draw to, I got some human liver here, and we're going to salt, pepper, and roll it in some poppy seeds and add a little bit of fried.
Absolutely, and you know, that shows. That is why it's important to experiment with language, because it shows that when you can experiment with language and broaden your ideas of what should be language in poetry, you can do so much more. And so I'm glad you brought that up, Rex. All right, well, I don't know about the rest of you, but I have had fun with this show. Thank you, Rex and Victoria, for co-hosting with me. Thank you, Kel and Jeremy, for being here and sharing your voices, reading and commenting. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We appreciate you all. And make sure to check out the contest that hosts and hostesses have happening in the topic board in Late Night Poets, because you're bound to find something that you'll want to write to. All right. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night, gang.
Good night.